Chapter 149. The pupil of the Marshalsea, the day was sunny, and the Marshalsea, with the hot noon striking upon it, was unwontedly quiet. Arthur Clennam dropped into a solitary armchair, itself as faded as any debtor in the jail, and yielded himself to his thoughts. In the unnatural peace of having gone through the dreaded arrest, and got there, the first change of feeling which the prison most commonly induced, and from which dangerous resting place, so many men had slipped down to the depths of degradation and disgrace by so many ways, he could think of some passages in his life, almost as if he were removed from them into another state of existence. Taking into account where he was, the interest that at first brought him there, when he had been free to keep away, and the gentle presence, that was equally inseparable from the walls and bars about him, and from the impalpable remembrances of his later life which no walls or bars could imprison, it was not remarkable that everything his memory turned upon should bring him round again to Little Dorrit. Yet it was remarkable to him, not because of the fact itself, but because of the reminder it brought with it, how much the dear little creature had influenced his better resolutions. None of us clearly know to whom, or to what we are indebted in this wise, until some marked stop in the whirling wheel of life brings the right perception with it. It comes with sickness, it comes with sorrow, it comes with the loss of the dearly loved, it is one of the most frequent uses of adversity. It came to Clennam in his adversity, strongly and tenderly. When I first gathered myself together, apostrophe he thought, and set something like purpose before my jaded eyes, whom had I before me, toiling on, for a good object's sake, without encouragement, without notice, against ignoble obstacles that would have turned an army of received heroes and heroines. One weak girl. When I tried to conquer my misplaced love, and to be generous to the man who was more fortunate than I, though he should never know it, or repay me with a gracious word, in whom had I watched patience, self-denial, self-subjugal, charitable construction, the noblest generosity of the affections, and the same poor girl. If I, a man, with a man's advantages and means and energies, had slighted the whisper in my heart, that if my father had erred, it was my first duty to conceal the fault, and to repair it, what youthful figure with tender feet going almost bare on the damp ground, with spare hands ever working, with its slight shape, but half protected from the sharp weather, would have stood before me to put me to shame? Little Dorrit's. Apostrophe so always as he sat alone in the faded chair, thinking. Always, Little Dorrit. Until it seemed to him, as if he met the reward of having wandered away from her, and suffered anything to pass between him, and his remembrance of her virtues. His door was opened, and the head of the elder Chivery was put in a very little way, without being turned towards him. I am off the lock, Mr. Clennam, and going out. Can I do anything for you? Apostrophe, apostrophe, many thanks. Nothing. Apostrophe, you'll excuse me opening the door, apostrophe, said Mr. Chivery, but I couldn't make you hear. Apostrophe, did you knock? Apostrophe, apostrophe, half a dozen times. Apostrophe, rousing himself, Clennam observed that the prison had awakened from its noontide doze, that the inmates were loitering about the shady yard, and that it was late in the afternoon. He had been thinking for hours. Your things is come, apostrophe, said Mr. Chivery, and my son is going to carry him up. I should have sent him up, but for his wishing to carry him himself. Indeed he would have him himself, and so I couldn't send him up. Mr. Clennam, could I say a word to you? Apostrophe, pray come in, apostrophe, said Arthur, for Mr. Chivery's head was still put in at the door a very little way, and Mr. Chivery had but one ear upon him, instead of both eyes. This was native delicacy in Mr. Chivery, true politeness, though his exterior had very much of a turnkey about it, and not the least of a gentleman. Thank you, sir, apostrophe, said Mr. Chivery, without advancing. It's no odds me coming in. Mr. Clennam, don't you take no notice of my son if he'll be so good, in case you find him cut up anyways difficult. My son has a art, and my son's art is in the right place. Me and his mother knows where to find it, and we find it situated correct. Apostrophe. With this mysterious speech, Mr. Chivery took his ear away and shut the door. He might have been gone 10 minutes when his son succeeded him. Here's your portmanteau, apostrophe, he said to Arthur, putting it carefully down. It's very kind of you. I am ashamed that you should have the trouble. Apostrophe, he was gone before it came to that, but soon returned, saying exactly as before, here's your black box, which he also put down with care. I am very sensible of this attention. I hope we may shake hands now, Mr. John. Apostrophe, young John, however, drew back, turning his right wrist in a socket made of his left thumb and middle finger and said as he had said at first, I don't know as I can. No, I find I can't. Apostrophe, he then stood regarding the prisoner sternly, though with a swelling humor in his eyes that looked like pity. Why are you angry with me, apostrophe, said Clennam, and yet so ready to do me these kind services? There must be some mistake between us. If I have done anything to occasion it, I am sorry. Apostrophe, no mistake, sir, apostrophe, returned John, turning the wrist backwards and forwards in the socket, for which it was rather tight. No mistake, sir, in the feelings with which my eyes behold you at the present moment. If I was at all fairly equal to your weight, Mr. Clennam, which I am not, and if you weren't under a cloud, which you are, and if it wasn't against all rules of the Marshalsea, which it is, those feelings are such that they would stimulate me more to having it out with you in a round on the present spot than to anything else I could name. Apostrophe. Arthur looked at him for a moment in some wonder and some little anger. Well, well, apostrophe, he said. A mistake. Turning away, he sat down with a heavy sigh in the faded chair again. Young John followed him with his eyes, and, after a short pause, cried out, I beg your pardon. Apostrophe, apostrophe, freely granted, apostrophe, said Clennam, waving his hand without raising his sunken head. Say no more. I am not worth it. Apostrophe, this furniture, sir, apostrophe, said young John in a voice of mild and soft explanation, belongs to me. I am in the habit of letting it out to parties without furniture that have the room. It ain't much, but it's at your service. Free, I mean. I could not think of letting you have it on any other terms. You're welcome to it for nothing. Apostrophe, Arthur raised his head again to thank him, and to say he could not accept the favor. John was still turning his wrist, and still contending with himself in his former divided manner. What is the matter between us? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Arthur. I decline to name it, sir, apostrophe, returned young John, suddenly turning loud and sharp. Nothing's the matter. Apostrophe, Arthur looked at him again, in vain, for an explanation of his behavior. After a while, Arthur turned away his head again. Young John said, presently afterwards, with the utmost mildness. The little round table, sir, that's nigh your elbow, was you know whose, I needn't mention him, he died a great gentleman. I bought it of an individual that he gave it to, and that lived here after him. But the individual wasn't any ways equal to him. Most individuals would find it hard to come up to his level. Apostrophe, Arthur drew the little table nearer, rested his arm upon it, and kept it there. Perhaps you may not be aware, sir, apostrophe, said young John, that I intruded upon him when he was over here in London. On the whole, he was of opinion that it was an intrusion, though he was so good as to ask me to sit down and to inquire after father and all other old friends, leastways humblest acquaintances. He looked, to me, a good deal changed, and I said so when I came back. I asked him if Miss Amy was well, apostrophe, and she was? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I should have thought you would have known without putting the question to such as me, apostrophe, returned young John, after appearing to take a large invisible pill. Since you do put me the question, I am sorry I can't answer it. But the truth is, he looked upon the inquiry as a liberty, and said, what was that to me? It was then I became quite aware I was intruding, of which I had been fearful before. However, he spoke very handsome afterwards. Very handsome. Apostrophe, they were both silent for several minutes. Except that young John remarked, at about the middle of the pause, he both spoke and acted very handsome. Apostrophe, it was again young John who broke the silence by inquiring. If it's not a liberty, how long may it be your intentions, sir, to go without eating and drinking? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I have not felt the want of anything yet, apostrophe, returned Clennam. I have no appetite just now. Apostrophe, the more reason why you should take some support, sir, apostrophe, urged young John. If you find yourself going on sitting here for hours and hours partaking of no refreshment, because you have no appetite, why then you should and must partake of refreshment without an appetite. I'm going to have tea in my own apartment. If it's not a liberty, please to come and take a cup. Or I can bring a tray here in 2 minutes. Apostrophe, feeling that young John would impose that trouble on himself if he refused, and also feeling anxious to show that he bore in mind both the elder Mr. Chivery's entreaty and the younger Mr. Chivery's apology, Arthur rose and expressed his willingness to take a cup of tea in Mr. John's apartment. Young John locked his door for him as they went out, slided the key into his pocket with great dexterity, and led the way to his own residence. It was at the top of the house nearest to the gateway. It was the room to which Clennam had hurried on the day when the enriched family had left the prison forever, and where he had lifted her insensible from the floor. He foresaw where they were going as soon as their feet touched the staircase. The room was so far changed that it was papered now, and had been repainted, and was far more comfortably furnished, but he could recall it just as he had seen it in that single glance, when he raised her from the ground, and carried her down to the carriage. Young John looked hard at him, biting his fingers. I see you recollect the room, Mr. Clennam? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I recollect it well, heaven bless her. Apostrophe, apostrophe, oblivious of the tea, young John continued to bite his fingers, and to look at his visitor, as long as his visitor continued to glance about the room. Finally, he made a start at the teapot, gustily rattled a quantity of tea into it from a canister, and set off for the common kitchen, to fill it with hot water. The room was so eloquent to Clennam in the changed circumstances of his return to the miserable Marshalsea. It spoke to him so mournfully of her, and of his loss of her, that it would have gone hard with him to resist it, even though he had not been alone. Alone, he did not try. He had his hand on the insensible wall as tenderly as if it had been herself that he touched, and pronounced her name in a low voice. He stood at the window, looking over the prison parapet with its grim spiked border, and breathed a benediction through the summer haze towards the distant land, where she was rich and prosperous. Young John was some time absent, and, when he came back, showed that he had been outside, by bringing with him fresh butter in a cabbage leaf, some thin slices of boiled ham in another cabbage leaf, and a little basket of watercresses and salad herbs. When these were arranged upon the table to his satisfaction, they sat down to tea. Clennam tried to do honor to the meal, but unavailingly. The ham sickened him, the bread seemed to turn to sand in his mouth. He could force nothing upon himself, but a cup of tea. Try a little something green, apostrophe said young John, handing him the basket. He took a sprig or so of watercress, and tried again. But the bread turned to a heavier sand than before, and the ham, though it was good enough of itself, seemed to blow a faint simum of ham through the whole Marshalsea. Try a little more something green, sir, apostrophe said young John, and again handed the basket. It was so like handing green meat into the cage of a dull imprisoned bird, and John had so evidently brought the little basket as a handful of fresh relief from the stale hot paving stones and bricks of the jail, that Clennam said, with a smile, "It was very kind of you to think of putting this between the wires, but I cannot even get this down today." Apostrophe, as if the difficulty were contagious, young John soon pushed away his own plate and fell to folding the cabbage leaf that had contained the ham. When he had folded it into a number of layers, one over another, so that it was small in the palm of his hand, he began to flatten it between both his hands, and to eye-clean them attentively. "I wonder," apostrophe he at length said, compressing his green packet with some force, "that if it's not worth your while to take care of yourself for your own sake, it's not worth doing for someone else's." Apostrophe, truly, apostrophe, returned Arthur, with a sigh and a smile, "I don't know for whose." Apostrophe, Mr. Clennam, apostrophe, said John, warmly, "I am surprised that a gentleman who is capable of the straightforwardness that you are capable of should be capable of the mean action of making me such an answer. Mr. Clennam, I am surprised that a gentleman who is capable of having a heart of his own should be capable of the heartlessness of treating mine in that way. I am astonished at it, sir. Really and truly I am astonished." Apostrophe, apostrophe, having got upon his feet, to emphasize his concluding words, young John sat down again, and fell to rolling his green packet on his right leg, never taking his eyes off Clennam, but surveying him with a fixed look of indignant reproach. "I had got over it, sir," apostrophe said John. "I had conquered it, knowing." Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.